Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Launching a new business? 99 Designs is your number one choice for quality design at an affordable price. Start your next design project at 99designs.com/hack and get a $99 upgrade for free.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. I'm so glad you decided to join me again today, and I'm also so glad for your feedback from the last episode. So the last episode, if you've taken a chance to listen to it, if you haven't, please go back. Dane Maxwell was on the show from the foundation, and the show went to about 50 minutes, plus Dane himself, he kind of took control of the conversation. I sat on this conversation actually for almost 6 months without releasing it, and I wasn't sure I was going to edit it up and then release it, but then I decided just to release it as is. It kind of scared me. I've got some amazing feedback from people. Some of you love it, some of you hate it, but it seems like everyone's really got an opinion, which is kind of cool. But now we're back to our normal thing, so yeah, enough chit-chat. Let's get right to it. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a virtual CEO, serial entrepreneur, one of the greatest speakers I've ever had the honor of watching speak. He is also the host of the New Business Podcast, blogger, and four times best-selling author. His businesses include Virtual Staff Finder, Live to Sell, and now his latest and greatest, Youpreneur. His book, Virtual Freedom, has sold more than 30,000 copies on Amazon. Virtual Freedom is the essential guide to running and growing a business with the help of virtual staff. In fact, if it wasn't for this guy and his tropical think tank conference, Hack the Entrepreneur probably would not exist. Now, let's hack Chris Ducker. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, 99 Designs, the best place for new businesses to build their brands. If you're wondering how your small business can stand out in today's increasingly competitive marketplace, I've got one word for you: branding. While building a brand may be easier and more affordable than you imagined, it still does require some time and money. So why is it worth the effort? Because it allows you to stand out from the rest of the businesses that are out there in your market. When customers have many, many choices, branding helps them make the decision to use your business. Your brand should highlight your unique virtues and let customers know they can expect from your small business. In today's climate, with the internet, social media, technology, it's crucial to have and develop a clear brand voice to cut through the noise. Whether you need a logo to launch your brand, a t-shirt to show it off, or a website to bring it online, 99 Designs is a great place to build your brand. Visit 99designs.com/hack and you will get a $99 upgrade of services absolutely free. Welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. Today, we have an extra special guest. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, John. I appreciate it.
Oh, man, I've been waiting for this one for a long time, Chris.
Me too.
Awesome.
You didn't invite me. I mean, you know, I would have come on any time for you. No, I'm just playing. We had to play around with the schedule a little bit. But yeah, I'm pumped to be here. It's going to be great to chat with you.
Awesome. Let's jump straight into it.
Let's do it.
Chris, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Wow, one thing: delegation, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, there's a lot of different strategies and tactics and, you know, that sort of type of thing. You know, podcasting has been huge. Blogging has been huge to business growth in the last 5 years. But really, in terms of if I truly was put on the spot and said one thing and one thing only, it would be delegation and learning how to delegate like a champion. I mean, I was your typical 70-hour a week entrepreneur 5 years ago, and then I burned out and I ended up in hospital and on antidepressants for a couple of weeks, and I didn't like it at all. So the changes had to be made, and that's exactly what happened in 2010. By the end of the year, I'd removed myself from the business, but to do it, I had to hire 8 people. That's how much I was in the business, shackled to the business. And so delegation all the way.
So how did you build that business up, do you think, so far though, as and being the central key figure, doing eight people's jobs? Or do you think that actually the business would have grown exponentially faster and more if you had have done this sooner?
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't generally, as a rule of thumb, I don't generally look back and say, what if? That's not my style. I tend to sort of look forward and say, you know, what can we do kind of thing. I think the business probably still would have grown. You know, we got involved in an industry, which is, you know, the outsourcing industry at a time that, you know, it wasn't new by any stretch of the imagination, but it was hot when we started the business. And so, you know, we probably would have grown the business if more people had been involved without any major issues. But, you know, I was your typical do everything entrepreneur. You know, it was like, and I often joke and say, you know, we're weirdos. Like, we have this strand of DNA that is unlike anyone else's. And so that kind of type A mentality of wanting to do everything, not wanting to let go, you know, if it is going to save me money to learn how to do something myself instead of hire somebody who really knows how to do it for me, then I'll go with the easy option and just, or in my mind anyway, the easy option of learning how to do it and save money myself. So, you know, yeah, you know, I don't know. It's a tough question to answer. I think, you know, we would have grown the business regardless just because of the industry and the time that we got involved with it. But, you know, it was what it was. I put the extra time and effort in and it worked, but it unfortunately had detrimental effects on me and my health and relationships and everything else. But I came out on the other side in one piece, which is good.
Yeah, now you're actually helping other people achieve this. And this is such a difficult, difficult thing. I know because I'm going through it myself with the podcast as a business. Mm-hmm. Like, I have an assistant, but I don't give her nearly enough work. I just, it's like, I'm always doing it myself.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's just, you know how it is.
Well, it's the type A mentality, man. You know, there's nothing wrong with it, right? This is the way we're wired as business owners, as entrepreneurs. But to truly get traction, to truly grow, and I mean really blossom mm-hmm. as a business owner, you've got to learn how to delegate. You've got to start letting go. Because if you don't, it's actually going to end up pulling you back. It really will.
It does. I totally know it does. And so when you think back to that time when everything, 70 hours just kind of wiped you out, when you went to hire the first of this eight people, was this like, were you, I'm going to do small tasks first? Or were you just like, nope, top level, we're going here, that's it. And then work, like, what, do you remember who the first person was you hired and what they did?
Yeah, the first person I hired was a trainer. So we put a one-year goal in play for 2010. And we busted that goal down into monthly goals for all of the things that were basically just sucking up my time every day. Like, I remember January like it was yesterday. It was get myself out of email hell, because I was stuck inside of Outlook for like 6 hours a day, literally sitting at a desk, ruining my lower back. I didn't know it at the time, but even after I'd removed myself from the business, it didn't stop me having back surgery 2 years later because of the strain and the stress that I'd put on my lower back. I had to have an invasive spine surgery procedure in my lower back to correct the problem that came from sitting on my ass all day in email. So yeah, so email was the first one. Then the first hire we made was actually in February. It was a trainer, because not only was I helping to recruit all the staff and interview all the staff, and hire all the staff, I was also training all the staff and motivating all the staff and doing the company culture and managing the staff day to day and, you know, a whole lot of other stuff. So training was a big one because we were in a growth spurt at the time and we were hiring like mad. At the time, I think, yeah, going into the end of 2009, we had about 120 people working for us. By the end of 2010, we had over 200 people. So we'd almost doubled our workforce in a year. So training was a big time suck. I was probably spending 2 to 3 hours a day training new staff, pretty much maybe 3 or 4 times a week I was having to do that. And so, yeah, that was the first person that I hired, was somebody to come in and alleviate that for me. And it was scary at first because, you know, like I said, we believe we're better than everyone else. Yeah. I've been doing this for a long, long time. Can this person come in and learn from me how to do it the way I do it and have the same effects and the same results? And luckily, that hire was a golden hire because that person is still with me 5 years later, and she is amazing. And she's just, if I could clone her 20 times, it would be a we'll get there, John. At some point, we'll be able to clone all-star employees, trust me. But we're not there quite yet, so I have to pay her very well and treat her well so she doesn't leave.
Yeah, exactly. Man, all right. You have no idea how close that whole stuck in email 6 hours a day and then a sore back and back surgery. Like, my back is killing me right now, and I spend so much time in email sitting. And I have an assistant who's not doing it. But
well, you know,
and she's awesome. Okay. I know she's awesome. That's why she's still there, because I know it's my fault, not hers.
Well, you know, I mean, let me give you some tips right now real quick on email then. So number one, stop sitting down. Get yourself a standing desk. You are ultimately murdering your back by sitting down for that much every single day. If I could go back, that would be probably one of the biggest changes I would make in terms of the way that I actually worked day to day. I would be standing up. I stand up 70% of my day now. I have one of those desks that moves up and down.
Yeah.
So 70% of my day, I'm standing up now. And I've already had the back surgery, but I don't want to have no more back surgery.
I don't blame you.
So that honestly is the biggest hack that I can give you from a kind of, not only from a just a health, you know, scenario, but also a productivity scenario. Because when you're standing, you move quicker, man. I don't know. There's something about just busting through my schedule and through my tasks when I stand. It's pretty hardcore. So number one is to get standing up. And number two is to have that assistant work through your email every day before you get to work. So I average around 200 to 250 emails a day. I'm blessed to have an amazing online community that love to reach out to me via email and Twitter and everything else. Now, Twitter, I manage myself. No one touches my Twitter account. So whenever you hear back from Chris on Twitter, it's always me tweeting back to you. But email, I just could not do anything else if I was handling that many emails myself. So by the time I get onto email, it's now 8:30 in the morning in the Philippines at the time of us recording this here. I won't open my Gmail inbox until 10 a.m. And I know that my head GVA, Michelle, who's based in Manila, has spent probably 2.5 hours at that point cleaning out around about 80% of that email that's come in overnight.
Wow.
So, and here's the other thing. I won't check email again. So I will check it first thing in the morning at 10 o'clock. Usually about 45 minutes is all I need to go through the 30 to 40 emails that she leaves behind. Because I have a rule, I only do 3-sentence emails. Anybody that's emailed me will know that.
Yeah.
Anything more than 3 sentences, I pick up the phone or Skype, plain and simple. So that helps me bust through that email real quick. And then I will check it again just at the end of the day as I'm wrapping up, which is usually around about 3 p.m.-ish my time. So I only work 5 or 6 hours a day now. And then I will just, and that's usually internal stuff that I'm looking at rather than replying to anything that's come in from a community perspective or business perspective. I usually do that first thing in the morning. So I only check email twice a day. And when I mean I only check, I mean I close my Gmail tab down. Like there's no notifications on my phone or anything like that. So that's the way I handle my email. So, you know, Michelle, she's a lifesaver. I mean, you know, literally, I would spend hours and hours in email if I didn't have her doing what she does.
I love that. And that 3-sentence rule, I got that from you, I don't know, it was a couple of years ago now. And
I've been doing it for ages, yeah.
Yeah, and the first time I saw it, I was like, wow. And then it leads to a blog post. There's a link in there so you can read about it if you want.
Yeah.
And then it's like, and I've told so many people, like, do this. It just makes so much sense. And typically, if you send out a 3-sentence, people kind of get the point. It's like they reply back quickly.
Yes, yes, exactly.
I love it.
I mean, email for me is for simple confirmation of things or a quick answer to a question. It's not to have a full-blown bloody conversation, you know? We use our voices for that on this amazing invention called the telephone, or equally amazing invention, voice over IP. And so, you know, that's kind of the rule that I have, and it works well for me.
Yeah, excellent. All right, Chris, so we heard about you building this amazing business, super, super impressive, except almost with your own bare hands, falling apart mentally and physically, 2009, 2010. But let's go back to the beginning, because there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things.
Mm-hmm.
Either they have this calling to make something huge and this big difference in the world, or as seems to mostly be the case, they find they simply cannot work for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell me what side of the fence you fall on, Chris, and when you discovered this about yourself?
I was on the latter side of that fence. So I was working for, an incredible boss, actually. This guy was amazing. Such a nice guy. Infomercial business based out of Miami, Florida. I was working from my home here in the Philippines. I'd been involved in the business for a while prior to working with him, and he kind of hunted me down and poached me because I was good at what I was doing. I was international sales director, so I was handling sales and marketing for, a good 60, 70% of, you know, the distributors worldwide for this firm, and he wanted some of that. So I got involved with that, and outside of work, super nice guy, very rich guy. We're talking, you know, flying to Miami a couple times a year to hang out and work. Beautiful house, you know, $2.5 million yacht outside his backyard. You know, probably cost him like 30 grand a month just to keep afloat. But it was nothing to the guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just really nice guy. You know, floor seats at the Heat game, you know, pre-Super Bowl concerts, you know, you name it. It was great. The moment he got in the work mode, different ball game. And I stuck with it for a long time because, to be very frank with you, he was paying me extremely well. Like, as a job, it was a lot of money for anybody working a fun job in a fun industry like that. You know, I'd get to go to Vegas for big shows and all this sort of stuff. And, it, you know, Monte Carlo once a year. I mean, it was an incredible industry to be involved in. I made a lot of good friends, a lot of contacts. But inside of work, the guy was the biggest micromanaging pain in the butt a-hole you could possibly imagine to deal with. I mean, he used to say it was so bad. I'm not going to lay it all out, but let me show you just one thing. We talk about email. He used to make me BCC him into every email that I sent.
My God.
And he used to, not only that, but he used to automatically receive a copy of every email that I received.
Oh.
So that he could see exactly what was going on at all times. And I was like, dude, with the greatest respect to you, you treat me like a chump. You know, like, I've been in this game for a while. I'm a professional guy. I don't need you looking over this, you know, my shoulder. And yeah, after 2 years, I was in Miami and I was on an air. I was coming back home after a month over there. We were shooting some infomercials. I was working on voiceovers for the guy. So I was that guy, but wait, there's more. If you call in the next 15 minutes, our friendly operator, you know, that was me.
Wow. I was doing, you're really I was good doing at that.
I told you I was getting paid well. So so he was having me do, I was wearing a lot of different hats for this guy, but I was enjoying it, quite frankly. It was just him. I didn't like working with this guy anymore. And I don't know how much money I put in his pocket, but I mean, I was averaging $1 million a month in sales for the guy.
Wow.
In revenue. So I don't know. I'm not quite sure what his margins were, but I, you know, based on the industry he was in, it was pretty insane. The markups are mad. If you ever buy an inflatable sofa on TV, understand you're getting ripped off. It just is what it is, all right? So, yeah, so I just had enough. I was at 37,000 feet. I was on an airplane coming back to the Philippines from Miami, and I just got out my laptop and started writing out my resignation email.
Wow.
And I arrived in Hong Kong, connected to their incredibly fast, free airport Wi-Fi.
It's nice.
And dude, it's so good.
I could just stay
in the lounge and work. It's such a great airport. And hit the send button. And he freaked out. And I sort of told him that I'm done. He tried to throw more money at me, almost 50% more money. And I was like, nope, I'm done. And I went on a sabbatical for a couple of months. And then my wife got pregnant, my wife Urs, who you've met and hung out with. And I was like, okay, I guess I got back, you know, I got savings, but I guess I got to go back to work. But I'm not going to work for somebody else now. This is it. And that was when we set up the Lift to Sell group. And that was, what, 10 years ago now. So yeah, there you go. There's the story.
That's awesome. Do you think at all, maybe you put up with, or maybe before you got to know him well enough, but do you think you maybe wanted like a mentorship out of him?
Yes.
Like, he lived this lavish lifestyle that was probably impressive.
Oh, no, without a doubt. I mean, when you're at the Miami Heat game, when they're playing the Lakers, and you've got literally front row, and I'm not exaggerating that, off to one side of the court, and you've got, you know, 8 or 9 seats to your left, Carlos Santana, and another 4 or 5 seats to your right, that hot blonde lady actress from CSI Miami. I don't even know her name, but I know she's hot. Hey, man, just telling how
totally,
it is.
Oh, you are.
Right. And you're there and, you know, you're like, oh, my God, you know, this is legit. Like, the guy's legit. You know, you go to a vodka bar at halftime and, you know, you've got all these guys around you and you're like, you know, this is legitimate. Like, this is a great lifestyle. And I think he was a mentor to a certain degree. I've had two mentors in my life. The first guy was a guy called Graham Bond, no relation to James, back in London in the publishing business. And he taught me how to be a sales guy. He taught me how to be a marketing guy. He taught me how to be a team player and all the rest of it. Easily one of the greatest men I've ever had the opportunity to work with and be around. I was with that company almost 8 years. And I look back on my time there with great fondness. I heard he passed away from cancer a few years ago. And actually, I cried.
Yeah,
like I didn't even cry for 3 or 4 months after my own father died. But when I heard about him dying, I cried immediately. So it was, he made a real profound impression on me life-wise. This guy, however, he was a mentor. He did make, you know, an impression on me, but it was everything how to not do certain things. It was like how to not manage people, how to not be a team player, how to not be a good boss. And so, yeah, you know, it's funny how life deals you those cards every now and then. I didn't know it at the time. But I, you know, he really did help me, you know, looking back on it. It was the catalyst for me to become the entrepreneur that I am now. But I look back on it. I mean, he was an incredibly strong brander, very, very good marketer. You know, the infomercial world, you know, say what you want about it, but it's incredibly cutthroat and very, very competitive.
Yeah.
And he was crushing it. You know, he was creating great products, doing great marketing. And he was really one of the first infomercial guys that was getting his products into retail. Like every time he had a new product, he was getting in the retail, Walgreens and all the rest of it. So it was a good time in terms of learning, but in terms of working, it was horrible, you know, but I learned a lot. So I do look back on it, you know, with somewhat good memories from what I learned from a life lesson perspective.
Yeah. I like how you said that looking back, it's probably a catalyst towards your entrepreneur career. But to me, I was like almost thinking like you were almost thinking like an entrepreneur already, even though you didn't know it. Like, I'm going to learn from this guy how he does what he does because it's impressive, right?
Yeah.
That's what we still do. Like, look at where people are, like, and what they're doing, and then try and figure out what the hell it is they're doing. Because,
yeah. And I mean, you know, to tell you honest as well, I mean, this guy left me to my own devices. I mean, you know, there was no, he wasn't managing me. It was like, you know, this is what you do, go and do it. So, you know, I had to research markets, I had to contact people cold. I had to build up relationships. I had to pitch product. I had to send, you know, samples and tapes of shows and, you know, promise to do this, that, and the other. I was basically running my own business for him. And so, you know, I'm pretty sure those 2 years, you know, that I was working with him, I think really the, you know, the big kind of shift mindset wise from, you know, employee to actually working for myself, even though I was employed, you know, I had the ability to be able to, you know, learn how to manage myself properly. And, you know, like I said, you learn something from every situation, you know, positive or negative.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, Chris. So we know that you are the master of delegation and that's your one thing. And now you teach other people and help them, I mean, with your best-selling book. And we know that you know about the 80-20 rule, do 20%, get 80% of the results, and how you're supposed to do what you're good at and delegate the rest. Can you tell me something specifically in your business that you are not good at?
Wow, what a good question. I've never had that one. Okay, what am I not good at? It's not that I'm brilliant at everything. I just want to give you a good answer.
Fair enough. We'll take that. We'll take that somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. What am I not good? You know what? I'll go out on the limb and say, actually, I don't think I'm a very good manager, if I'm to be really honest.
Wow.
And I've had this discussion with my wife and with even with some of my management, you know, the people that I am managing. I'm not a very good manager. I'm actually not. I'm not. What I am a good leader and I'm a good motivator. And so I don't, you know, I don't micromanage my staff at all. I try actually to spend as little time with my management team as I possibly can, not because I'm lazy or because I'm a crappy manager, but because I want them to grow on their own. And, you know, there's a lot of moving parts in our businesses. And there's a group of businesses. It's not just one company. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have different managers and different sections in all those different businesses. And so I get together with them either in person or virtually if I'm traveling once a week. We have 20-minute meetings with each individual department. I'll do 3 or 4 meetings, and then I'll break for lunch, and then I'll do another 3 or 4 meetings. And those meetings are 20 minutes each. They're in the conference room. There are coffee and donuts, but there's no chairs. And so we stand up. And, you know, if you get tired, you grab one of the Swiss balls that's in the corner of the conference room. There's like 7 or 8 of them in there. And you stand up. And I found that by doing stand-up meetings, there's no chit-chat because people don't want to be standing for very long. They want to get back to their desks and doing what they're doing there. So it works great. And that's really the only real interaction with my management team are those short 20-minute meetings every week. And if I am traveling and if I'm extremely busy from, say, a speaking perspective, I will sometimes not speak to them for 3-4 weeks at a time if I'm really, really busy. And, you know, time zones don't kind of add up and things like that, which does happen quite regularly when I travel. So, I try to spend as little time with them as possible because I'm not a very good manager, but I am a good leader and I'm a good mentor. And I've had people tell me that, you know, outright. So that's what I kind of do. I play on those mentorship and those leadership type strengths and stay away from the whole day-to-day management thing.
I love that. That's not at all what I was expecting you to say.
What were you expecting me to say?
I don't know. But I mean, I didn't expect management. It's like I thought that was part of like delegation's my one thing. So I assumed that delegation was managing than that delegating.
Well, you see, the whole thing now is that I've delegated the delegation.
That's true. Yeah, no, exactly. No, totally. But it makes me feel better because I've been in the last year, I've realized that I'm just a terrible manager, but I know I need the help and I know it has to be done somehow. So, and I know that I can lead. I can work somebody up to do anything. But
that's it right there. That's what you got to do, John. You got to, if you accept that and you bring someone else in to manage the rest of your staff for you, so that you can focus on the bigger picture of the business and those high level activities that makes up that 80-20 rule. And truly, that's what you do as the head honcho and let everybody else handle everything else. And that's what I do. You know, that's what I do. And, you know, I look back at like where I was, you know, from time to time, you know, 6 years ago when I was working all those hours, and now I work 5-6 hours a day, Monday to Thursday. I have a 3-day weekend. Friday's a weekend for me.
I love
so,
that.
And that's, it's been like that for like 3 years now. And when I say that, but I don't think a lot of people actually believe me, but I can show you my calendar. Like my Fridays are empty. Every single week, I do nothing every Friday. I have Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's my weekend. I pick up my boy from school every single Friday afternoon. He knows it's Friday. He knows daddy's coming to get him. And we go grab ice cream and then we come home and we do dinner and we play. And that's, you know, the beginning, the true beginning of the Friday for me is when I pick up my boy from school. But I'm even before then, I'm hanging out with the wife. We do, you know, sometimes we do a couple of movies back to back in an empty cinema. And all that sort of stuff. We love that stuff. So, you know, it's understanding what your strengths are. I think, you know, you're talking about hacking the entrepreneur. This is what we should be doing. We should be hacking ourselves like this. We should be looking at what we do best and then truly getting rid of the rest and handing it off to other people. It took me a while to get to where I am. I'm not going to say it's going to happen overnight. But what I am saying is it's completely and utterly possible. And you've just got to, you know, start making moves.
Totally. Yeah. That's what we're trying to do here.
Sure.
And that is also why I asked that question of what you're not good at. Because I find the people that are the most successful really do have a grasp on what they aren't good at. And you know you aren't a good manager.
Yeah.
And so you can get rid of that. That's so important.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's almost as important as what are you good at. You have to know what to get rid of. Otherwise, we're all conceited and egotistical and like, I'm good at everything. And it's like, no, you're not. I'm not. I'm just finally realizing that I'm not actually good at very many things. I'm good at one or two things. That's about it.
Exactly. Well, no, and that's all that's really needed at the end of the day. But Gary Vaynerchuk did a great video a little while ago. It was entitled Self-Awareness.
Yes.
You should link to this in your show notes so that listeners can check this video out. I watched this video and Gary's great anyway. But I mean, I watched this video and I was like, you know what? This is so bang on. Like every entrepreneur, particularly in the online / social space, needs to check this video out. I've linked to it a whole bunch of times. It's in buffer. Mm-hmm. I've linked to it a whole bunch of times on Twitter for my people. And, you know, he's basically saying, like, it's okay to be a B player in certain things, but, it, you know, focus in on what you're an A player at. You know, that's, you know, he just makes so much sense, that guy. And, you know, the other thing, what he said, somebody asked him a question on his show recently. Do you think the dress code has got anything to do with professionalism or the level of professionalism? It was like, it was probably the shortest answer I've ever seen him give on a Gary Vee show. And I haven't seen every episode, but probably close to it. He says something along the lines of, I don't think it has any reflection on professionalism or productivity. And I think the companies that don't understand that are going to be left behind. And that was it. That was the answer.
That's awesome.
And so bang on. I go to work in sneakers and a t-shirt. I'm the boss.
Exactly. You know? And just look at him.
Do your thing.
Yeah,
totally. Exactly.
Awesome, Chris. All right, okay, we're going to wrap up on something.
Okay.
This thing I've been dealing with, I'm working on, called the entrepreneurial gap. And so as entrepreneurs, we are always looking and pushing forward, setting goals 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road. And before we even get to those goals, we set 5 or 10 loftier ones into the future. Everything's always going to be better, it seems, in 6 months, when my business is doing this, when I get to write that book, when I get to do this, everything will always be better. Mm. But I find that oftentimes we fail and we live in this gap because we never stop and turn around and think about all the stuff we've been through, what we've done, what we've learned, and what we've accomplished, and give ourselves credit for it if it's due. So I would love you right now, Chris, if you could stop, turn around, look at what you've come through for your whole entrepreneurial journey at this point, and tell me how you feel about it.
I feel blessed, man. I feel very, very blessed to be in the position where I am. Not only do I have an incredibly successful multi-7-figure on an annual basis, you know, group of businesses, I have a best-selling book. I have a blog that has over 100,000 unique readers every month. I have a podcast that has 250,000 downloads on a monthly basis. I have a community of online followers that love what I do, and I love spending time with them. And I have a flourishing speaking career. I mean, people want to pay me to speak in front of their attendees at conferences. I mean, how cool is that? I'm blessed, man. I am very, very blessed to be in the situation where I am today. But I want to make it clear that it has come out of hard work. I don't use the hustle word like Gary does. I think that hustling is nothing new. It's been around for decades, and we should just call it working our asses off. And that's what you need to do if you want to be a successful entrepreneur. But the one thing that I have learned in the last 5 years since I removed myself from my business day to day is that to be truly, truly successful, you have to understand that you're not the be-all and end-all of your business. You must grow a team of people around you that can help you run, support, and grow that business. If you don't do that, burnout is inevitable. It will come your way. There's nothing that you can do to avoid it. And so, you know, if you understand that right now, before you hit the burnout and you start building the team and you start delegating and you start acting, you know, like you put on what I call it, you put on your big boy pants. You know, I'm good friends with Pat Flynn, and he was for the longest time working stupid hours, doing everything himself. And I was harping on at him for a good 3 years or so. Dude, will you please, for the love of all that's holy, will you please start delegating this stuff? And it was, he had like 7,000 unread emails in his inbox, he showed me. And I said, you got to declare email bankruptcy, and you got to get someone in here to help you out. And you got to start, you know, delegating all this stuff. He's now done it. And
now right at this very moment, he's in Australia hanging out with his family. That's awesome.
Having fun with his family. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's now the CEO. You know, he's no longer a solopreneur. And now he's a CEO. He's got a whole team of people helping him out. There are processes in place. There are deadlines. There are projects being worked. And when he's over in Australia having fun in Queensland, his team is doing what they should be doing. They're running and growing his business for him. And he's over there doing what he should be doing, and that's spending more time with the people that he loves the most. And, you know, that's what, for me, that's what being an entrepreneur is about, is truly just accepting the fact that you can't do it all on your own. You got to build that team. You have to.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you should be super, super happy and proud of yourself, because not only have you done it for yourself and your family, but you have this enormous ripple effect around you, which I don't know if you're even as aware of it as somebody from the outside is. But with people like Pat and his family right now enjoying themselves because of what you teach. And I mean, the fact that I wouldn't have this podcast or this audience without you. And it's pretty amazing, man. It's cool. It's really amazing.
Okay, the kind words. Sincerely, I do. Every day I get to hear from, you know, people either via an Amazon review or a tweet or an email or something. And, you know, they tell me that, you know, they've learned this from me or that from me, or they've acted on this or that. And, you know, it's awesome. Like I said, I'm blessed, man. I'm blessed. I mean, to think that, I mean, it is, when you look at those numbers, I still pinch myself. I mean, I get 100,000 people, individual people, come to my blog every single month. That is mad.
It's a big city. It's a big city.
Yeah.
People.
What it is a big ass party is what it is. You know? But no, I mean, like, when I look at that, I mean, you know, you look at like 100, you put 100 people in a room, that's a lot of people. You put 1,000, that's a lot. I get 100, you know, 100 times that come to my blog every, that's insane. I mean, what are they doing there? But I'm very, very blessed and very, very, very happy to be in the position where I am. Yeah,
well,
for sure.
Well deserved. So, Chris, we've got to talk about your business in passing. Can you specifically tell the listener where they can find out more about you and your business, please?
Sure. Yeah. Well, everything I do is on my online home, chrisducker.com. You find links to everything on there, to the book and to Virtual Star Finder and everything else that I do business-wise. And yeah, like I said, the only social media platform I pay any real attention to is Twitter. I'm not a big Facebook guy or LinkedIn or Google Plus guy. So if you want to connect, Twitter's the easiest way to do it. Or catch me on Periscope. I'm hanging out there quite a bit now.
I
like Periscope a lot. I think Periscope is going to be a massive game changer in our business. It's that instant gratification. It's those hearts, man. You know,
I've been watching you do it, and it's like, I got to get on there. I got to do this. Like,
yeah, no, it's going to be a game changer. It really is. It's going to be a game changer. I think that, you know, once they get rid of a few bugs and they, you know, incorporate some additional features that I would quite gladly pay for on a monthly basis, please do not ruin that platform with stupid adverts.
Yeah.
You know, make money out of charging people to want to take it serious. You know, I'd pay $500 a month to have some of the things that I want on there. Easy. I can tell you right now, I can directly correlate, and I mean this sincerely, I can directly correlate over $13,000 worth of sales on directly from Periscope in the last week and a half.
Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. Because people ask questions. I give them value. I give them the answers. And then they say, well, you know, where can I find out more? I just say, here's my website. And, you know, they've mentioned me in emails and tweets. Hey, I've just signed up for Tropical Think Tank 2016. Boom, that's $4,000 right there.
That's awesome.
You know, and, you know, this has all come off of hanging out and, you know, just goofing off a little bit and having some fun, providing some value. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're good at that. All right. So chrisducker.com, I will link to it in the show notes. The Gary V self-awareness video at Chris Ducker is Twitter. And I believe it's the same on Periscope.
It is.
I will link to all four of those things in the show notes for everyone. So Chris, please, thank you for stopping by. Thank you for taking the time to chat with me today. And please keep doing what you're doing, because as I said, it's making a huge difference to a lot of people. And it's awesome to watch.
And likewise to you, Sarah, as well. You're doing some great stuff.
Thanks, Chris. Chris, thank you so much for joining me. This was a really, really fun conversation. And you're out there listening, and Chris and I hadn't actually talked for almost over a year. We talked via email or on Twitter here and there, but it had been a long time. So we talked for about 30 minutes before this interview started. Then we hit stop and we went for almost a good hour after, and it was great. And so I'm glad we got to kind of loosen up first, and then we went to some really, really cool places during the conversation. And I'm really, really happy that I get to share this with you, because Chris is a smart, smart, smart dude, and he's done some amazing things. He's one of the few people I know online that has this brilliant offline business that Chris has like, he virtually runs as a virtual CEO. He runs hundreds and hundreds of employees, and it blows my mind still. I oftentimes forget about that because he also has this very cool online business now. But that's really, really cool because there is something definitely to be learned from the offline world. And if we can bring that knowledge and those skills online, it's amazing. So I got to go back over this conversation, a conversation that I've wanted to have for a long time. And I found it hard to find something that I could bring to this part of the show. But then on the third listen, there was this one thing, and it was almost too simple, I thought. It was almost too simple, but then it wasn't. It was that one thing that Chris said that really just stuck out to me. That one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
But I want to make it clear that it has come out of hard work. I don't use the hustle word like Gary does. I think that hustling is nothing new. It's been around for decades, and we should just call it working our asses off. And that's what you need to do if you want to be a successful entrepreneur.
And that's the hack. Chris. Yes, I love the simplicity. And I'd skipped over this because, as I said, it almost seems too simple, but it's the absolute truth. It absolutely, absolutely is. And the whole hustle thing with Gary Vee, which Gary Vee is apparently going to come on the show at some point. He's been booked 4 times now, but that's a whole other story. But I agree, hustle is not a new thing, but you absolutely have to work your ass off if you want to succeed at this. Not only that, but if you just work your ass off and be smart somewhat about it, but really just outwork a lot of people, you will succeed. The 1 year anniversary of Hack the Entrepreneur, I didn't know how to podcast. I'd never interviewed anybody until like 130 something episodes ago now. And most people stopped before me or quit before me or didn't start because they had never done it before either. Or else they did 1 episode a week because it was too much to do 3 like I do. So many reasons why I've gone to where I've gotten, why I've gotten to where I've gotten, and why I have you as an amazing listener is because I outwork most people podcasting. It's literally that simple. I'm not better. Well, maybe I'm getting better now because I do it a lot more than most people. I've been on hundreds of shows since then, and I podcast a lot. I was afraid of my own voice when I started. I was afraid of talking into a microphone when I started. Now it's what I do most of the day. Then I just outworked a lot of people. And that's exactly what you have to do. You can outwork people. You don't have to outsmart them. You don't have to have more resources and money than them. But you do have to outwork most people. You have to outwork your competition. You have to just outdo them by just sheer will of wanting it badder or more than the next person. It sounds too simple, but it's absolutely true. And Chris, you nail it with this because the hustle thing isn't new because it's essential and it's not really even like a hack, although it is this hack. But it's because it's so necessary. You can't get it without wanting it and without working harder for it than the person next to you. It's just that simple. So please determine what you want. Determine where you want to be a year from now, work back the steps that need to be done, and then outwork the next person. Then talk to me in a year from now. And if you wish, you can thank me for giving you the kick in the ass that was necessary. It's not easy. There's no easy way. There's no magic pill. There's no magic formula. There's no magic 10 steps. Sorry, you have to outwork the next person. And please, please do, because it'll be fun to watch. All right, that was a lot of fun. So at the beginning, I mentioned Chris Tucker's new program, youpreneur.com. I have not had the privilege of being inside of it, but I know Chris. I know I've given him thousands of dollars to go to one of his conferences, the very first one he ever put on. And the dude over-delivers every single time, and he knows business, offline, online. He knows people. He knows how to develop systems and processes and cool products. Youpreneur is a membership program that will let you work right with him and with a whole bunch of other solopreneurs and people doing this and creating cool businesses everywhere around the world. Upreneur.com is the place to check it out. Please, please do that. If you do, if you happen to sign up, tell Chris that I sent you. I get nothing for it. This is not an affiliate. He didn't give me an affiliate link. I wish he would have. Just kidding. But I would recommend it just the same. And I do. He's awesome. And I know he's awesome. And I'm actually thinking I might join it myself. So let me know if you try it out. Tell me. Hit me up on email and just tell me how it is. I would love to hear about it. But please check it out. Upreneur.com, Chris Ducker's latest thing. And I wholeheartedly stand behind it. All right. It's been fun. Thank you so much. Thank you so, so, so very much. And yeah, we're back at it. Back at these normal episodes again. I hope you enjoy it. And please, if you haven't listened to that Dane Maxwell, tell me how it is. I would love to hear. It was just go to the site. It's the one right before this, Dane Maxwell. And yeah, check it out. Tell me what you think. It seems to be dividing the audience right down the middle. But it's fun to try. All right. Thank you very much. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.